Where did you record this?
See, that's the type of...
It just makes me want to... That's my boy! Yeah!
Things I Will Keep, Thursday, 7 to 9 p.m. on 101.9 FM. Things that
I will keep. I have been advised to listen to this record.
My name is John DiGirolamo, and this is my piece, Year of the Rat. They burrow too deep within the earth to know nothing, says the Rat Man. He wears on him the appearance of the witch Rasputin, and it is witchcraft indeed that he performs. The rats had, for a time, forced me to divert from my usual path home from the newspaper office, but, in the past week, their numbers seemed to have dwindled. Today, in adventurous spirits, I decided to take the short way home around the former stronghold of the rats, Herman Worm's farm. I came across a rat man hunched over the beaten path near Worm's northern fence. Looming ahead, his back faced me and the tree line. "How goes it?" I ask at first, but he does not respond for a time. Fearing awkwardness, I hover around to have him at least notice my presence, and in doing so acknowledge my remark. He wears a black coat from the army of a foreign nation, muddied and stiffened with age and wear. It looks secondhand from the way it fits. Over his shoulder, I see fiddling. In his hands is a small tin can of seeds. "They burrow too deep within the earth to know nothing," says the rat man. "It's nice to live up here. We have the eyes for it. Not like the rats. They've got beady little eyes for the dark. But still, you don't gotta see a thing to know a thing." "What do you see here?" he asks. "Seeds," I say. "Seeds, yes," he says. "They're Rotobon seeds. Bad for rats. Don't need no rat poison if you've got Rotobon seeds. No one knows about them, because if they did, no one would buy the poison." He shakes the can and lets them rattle for me, as if to prove their efficacy. They jingle and play a seed song. In the air is the early winter chill that you can feel in your nostrils. The rat man is red from the cold, his ears swollen and cherry-colored. No hat, even in this weather. He listens for a moment, luring me into the silence. I hear the sound of the empty factories. I hear the trees decay. I hear the big beams in the warm farmhouse creak and rot. All that dead wood, perfect for rats. The seeds finish their song. "What do they do then?" I ask. "Kill rats," says the rat man. "Kill anything that can think. If you or I were ever to eat a Rotobon seed, we'd go out like a light. Same with dolphins, I think. But a cat or a dog, no beans, not thinkers." He plants the little seeds carefully along the fence, lining them up in the same direction. "Rats don't think," I say. "That's what you think," says the rat man. The trees overhead hiss, crackling with the cool breeze. The rat man pauses. The white-gray clouds overhead refuse to part, twisting and churning into mean faces. Shapes like rats, all tied together by their tails. It looks like rain. You can smell the mold from the warm farm when the air stills. It seems mold lingers in the wind everywhere these days. The smell of mold and the sound of rats. "Rats are thinkers, all right," he continues, whispering. "They think all day. They think just like you or me. The earth tells them things, and they think about them. They know things you or I don't, just like we know things they don't. But when you get too many rats together thinking... See, when rats get together, there's bad times ahead. They gotta convene, assess the situation. You gotta get 'em before anybody takes notice and panics, I guess. Pays the bills. Getting them, that is. Lord knows I'm afraid of what they'd say." The rat man pauses again. He goes back to his seeds. Then he turns his attention back to me. "There's a bad thing up ahead," says the rat man. "I got the rats, but I couldn't get the thing. Bad crops this year, maybe. Bad winds, bad health, bad something or other. You've got the look of someone who knows but won't tell," the rat man says to me. "That's good. Don't." His curiosity with me waning, the rat man returns to his seeds.
You're listening to Close Reads on CFRC 101.9 FM.
I'm Corey.
And I'm Madeline. On Close Reads, we share and analyze creative writing by students here at Queens. Tune in for Close Reads from close by.
Today, we'll be talking about Year of the Rat by John DiGirolamo, which you just heard, followed by Summerhead by the Cocteau Twins. Year of the Rat was published in the 2023 Quilt Mini, The Sublime.
John DiGirolamo is a third-year student studying film and art history. Outside of school, he writes short fiction and performs for the stage. His favorite books are by Roberto Bolaño. Today I want to talk about the dialogue in this piece and how it doesn't exactly function as dialogue usually does. First of all, visually on the page, it's not enclosed in quotation marks, but it's rather italicized. And we generally use italics to identify something of significance, something that's a little bit unusual, like maybe a different language that sticks out from the rest of the prose, or sometimes to identify like a thought or like a narration inside the narrator's mind. And so the fact that this is external dialogue happening between two characters in italics does mark it immediately for us as readers, if not as radio listeners, as something a little bit unusual. If we look at the lines themselves, it's an exchange between the rat man, this rat catcher, and the narrator, who we don't know much about except maybe that he is working at a newspaper office. And this exchange, I call it an exchange, but really it is dominated by the rat man. He's the one with the information, he's communicating information, he's kind of orienting the piece, and our narrator, in contrast, is really just receiving information, which is interesting when we think about the news frame. He's kind of collecting the news, he's collecting information from the spaces he's moving through, but he's not actually distributing in the same way that the rat man does as the expert in this sort of situation. So the line first that opens the piece, "They burrow too deep within the earth to know nothing," says the rat man. Immediately there's this idea of knowledge, the rats maybe as informants or witnesses, but people that have, or at least if not people, creatures that have an intimate knowledge of the earth, of their surroundings, and of their home. And as we move on from this first line, there is a lot of interest paid to knowledge, to understanding, and eventually this moves actually to speech itself, which of course is interesting because the general plot of this, if you can call it a plot, the general plot of this piece is happening through the dialogue exchange between characters. We have the line a little bit later in the piece, "Lord knows I'm afraid of what they'd say." And the "they" in question here is the rats. So there's the idea that the rats have not only this specific knowledge, this specific understanding, but that it's something that maybe could provoke fear in someone that, frankly, is still close to the situation. The rat man is an interesting character because he's, of course, called the rat man. He is a rat catcher. But there's a suggestion of a sort of a closeness to the rats that he's trying to destroy that is sort of inflicting on his character as well. There's a sort of stickiness to his profession that's kind of infecting who he is as a person. And so even though he is the one that's positioned here as holding the knowledge, as contributing information to our newspaper office narrator, he doesn't know everything. He kind of anticipates that there's other information in the situation that is not available to him. So there's a sort of a gradual layering of expertise in this piece, if you can call it that. There's the narrator who is entering the situation. We know it's out of his way from his usual walk home, so he's sort of an outsider in the situation. He knows some of the landmarks, but maybe he doesn't know the intricacies that go on there. There's the rat man who is a little bit more familiar with this place. He clearly kind of inhabits the space much more than the narrator does, and he understands things about the rats that live there. But then there's the rats themselves, and the rats are the ones that are burrowing under the earth. They're the thinkers. They're the ones that have more to say. They're the ones that are literally physically entering the earth, physically entering the surroundings, and as such, they have more information that frankly is not being passed up this ladder of expertise. It's not being passed to the narrator the way that the rat man is able to communicate his own thoughts. And so there's a stoppage there. There's a suggestion that even though the rats are in a way sort of, there's a stickiness, as I said, like sort of infecting the rat man, that transfer of knowledge is still not something that is totally possible. And as we move on to the end of the story, the rat man says to the narrator, "You've got the look of someone who knows but won't tell. That's good. Don't." There's the idea that this knowledge transfer maybe is not always something that you want to happen. And the knowledge in question here is a sort of an inkling that the rat man has that something bad is about to happen. So there's a question here that's happening with information and with news and with speech acts and language. And it's, how much do we actually want to communicate about bad things that might happen? There's a sort of uncanniness to this piece. And so we can kind of get an inkling of the sort of bad thing that might happen. And so we think about this layering of information that I've laid out, and we wonder, you know, what is the role of a writer, of a newspaper office person? He's probably a reporter, I would assume. What is the role of someone that does not have information when you receive bad news like that? And I think the fact that the exchange, as I say, the dialogue exchange is really not an exchange, suggests that what we want is actually for that information maybe to stop. You can receive information, maybe you don't actually want to be passing it forward, because he's really not speaking in this piece the way that the Rat Man does. And so just as we have a layering of information here in the different characters with the narrator, the Rat Man, and the rats, we have a sort of gradual layering of the information itself as it kind of emerges. But we get a sense that maybe this is where it stops. This is where the piece stops. Maybe it's not going to be transferred any further. And of course, as readers, we do complicate that sort of hierarchy, because we are getting the information from this piece as well. But of course, it's in a fictional frame. So we're outside of this world. And so the question of whether it should be passed forward in a way is passed on to us. We wonder, well, we're outside it. Maybe we know that these bad crops, the bad winds, bad health that the Rat Man talks about, maybe they will happen. But they won't happen to us. We don't live in this world. And so it goes to us as the sort of receivers of this information, as the last little chain in this hierarchy, to wonder, what should the narrator do? Does he just move forward with his life, pretend this was a strange thing that happened? Or does he consider it valuable information? What is information of value when you're in such an uncanny world? It's a question that I think the piece gestures at, but isn't really interested in answering. That's what I find very compelling about Year of the Rat. I think that it uses a lot of this questioning of knowledge and information and expertise fundamentally to produce an interesting encounter and an interesting atmosphere and an interesting reading experience, but it's not interested in finding all the answers. And I think that's what I find so compelling about it and what kind of keeps you moving forward through the story itself. Next up is The Redeemer by Dean Blunt and Inga Copeland, followed by an interview with John. I'm really excited to hear about this piece, and I hope that you are too. Thank you. I'm now sitting down with John, the writer of Year of the Rat. John, thank you so much for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
My first question is about your writing process, because Year of the Rat is a really interesting piece and I really enjoy it, but it is a little bit out there. So I wanted to ask what the inspiration was behind the story.
I think rats are cool. They're fun little critters. But I guess in terms of inspiration, I'll start with I was in a film production class with Professor Adnay, and we had to do like a concept kit for a bunch of ideas for short plays or screenplays. And one of the prompts was to create an encounter which reveals something underlying about the world. And I can't remember exactly whether or not he specified that it should be something maybe strange or a little conspiratorial, but that's how I read it, at least. And I thought that that was a really interesting kind of venue to get into it, to have the main character, the narrator, be kind of a reader surrogate to whom this world is equally as alien. Mm-hmm. And the rat catcher or the rat man be a very alien character. It's like he came into being right then and there. It's like, I don't know. He has a certain connection to the rats. I don't call him the rat catcher. I call him the rat man, which already gives him that kind of connotation where he has some kind of repertoire. He discusses them with dignity, even though he is, well, he's a killer. He considers them to be alive, to be thinking, but he really does it without remorse, and he does it almost like a crusade. So for inspiration, I don't know, just kind of rats as a collective, as kind of a giant mass of vermin, I'd say. They're like ants almost, where it's like not a hive mind, but it is something that lives underground, something that is just sort of underneath the surface, something that is clearly supremely intelligent to be social beings. And I wanted to kind of capture that, something that really is just kind of simmering underneath the surface that not everybody thinks about or sees. And the Rat Man kind of had a glimpse of it, and it clearly disturbs him to some extent.
That sense of the scene as an encounter is something that I did notice while reading it. Like I was thinking that it felt a lot more like a dramatic or like a film, a scene, mm-hmm. an encounter rather than a story with plot. So I want to jump into that a little bit further because it doesn't really have that conventional plot structure and it is more of an encounter. And you're also an actor. And as you said, you wrote this for a film class. So can you speak to how that comes into play in your writing, the kind of relationship between drama and film and then prose as more written literature?
So when I think about writing or my writing process, I'll usually go about it in a way where I really do intend for it to be read. I do want that kind of oral pleasure, A-U-R-A-L element pleasure, where I do like reading and I do like the tradition of reading out loud, because I think that the mouth kind of understands a lot more than the head might at first glance, where something that I really hate above all is clunky prose. And it really only feels clunky because when you read in your head, it's as if you're reading with your mouth. And if it's something that your mouth really can't pronounce, then it's something that your brain really can't either. Mm-hmm. Reading, I wanted to take on a very somatic quality, something which is very alive, something which has a capability to kind of move beyond the page into a more conversational tone, which I think also lets the reader in a lot, because it lets them put a lot of themselves into it when it becomes something which is alive, something that is designed to be out loud in a more active space than it is on the page.
Yeah, I like that idea of liveness because it gives a sense, I think, of the world, the liveness of the world, as well as just the liveness of the language, because of course language is all you have to really build that world when you're talking about the written word in this way. And in terms of the development of the story, I wanted to ask as well about the setting, because the setting is very well developed and at times really very specific in terms of really strong imagery and specific details. So I wanted to ask how you go about building the world for this story and how you decided which of these details to include given how short it actually is.
Well, I guess another kind of influence has just come from my academics is I do a lot of close reads because I'm also in an art history minor. So I study artworks very closely in terms of their visual content. So I tried to kind of pick out what I thought would be
some very easily accessible, very potent kind of visual symbols. Mm-hmm. One that I really wanted to have in there was the fact that he was wearing the coat of a foreign nation, which is immediately mm-hmm. kind of antagonistic a little bit. It signals that he's kind of, he might be part of a lower class. He might be already accustomed to human violence, a person who kind of inhabits a world who might be totally different from that of the narrator, who is coming from the city or the town or kind of a more urban space. So I kind of drew, usually when I'll start a story, I'll maybe pick a painting or an artist that I really enjoy the visual style of. For this one, I think it was like Andrew Wyeth, Alex Colville, these kind of mid-century, really prolific painters with these more muted, very brownish color palettes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really interesting idea of like the academic close reading and the visual close reading as being productive of a creative piece and of a written work. I guess I wanted to ask as well then, how do you see the relationship between that kind of like the visual work and the written work? Like, do you see this as a sort of visual piece in itself because you're drawing inspiration from those visuals of the different paintings? And of course, like there's a visual element to film. And if it was written for a film class, how do you see, I guess, like the visuals in a piece where you have to kind of gesture at them and create them yourself rather than actually point at them as something real?
Well, I'd say when I go about writing a piece, I approach it as I would if I created a painting, where you start with a composition, you start with kind of placing characters and kind of prescient symbols and props around a space, and then you kind of just let your characters ruminate and interact with them as they will. And I let stories kind of reveal themselves to me. So, you know, I couldn't tell you if the Ratman was right or wrong, or whether or not the narrator did ever see him again, or whether he didn't, mm-hmm. or what he was really thinking in that moment beyond what he said to me and what he says to the reader. So in terms of visual content, I think it is important, even though I don't like to dwell on, you know, long passages about certain environmental aspects, other than to just kind of break up the text to fill a silence, where I usually fill silences with visual description, mm-hmm. Where usually I'll kind of hone in on a certain sense to kind of fill that space on the page.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thing. And the idea of the visuals and the dialogue is kind of like interplay, because of course in something like film or in something like theater, you can still see what's happening while people are talking, but in written work, in prose fiction, you can really only have one or the other. I mean, you can have, like in the dialogue tags, you can have some environmental descriptors and things like that, but you really have to go back and forth balancing those different elements of the world. And I think that's something that this text does really effectively.
Mm-hmm.
Well, John, thank you so much for coming in today. And thank you so much for sharing your work with us. It was really a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
You can read Year of the Rat by John DiGirolamo on the Quilt website. This has been Close Reads with Corey and Madeline on CFRC 101.9 FM. To take us out, we'll have Rat Queen by the Mountain Goats.
Meek subjects by torchlight come to pay their respects. As foretold by the ancient texts. Lines snaking down the sewer. Reverent hush upon the crowd. One by one we approach. You're in the shroud. New dream. New dreams for the rat queen. New dreams. New dreams for the rat queen.
the dead sleepwalkers who never learned how to love new dreams. New dreams for the rat queen. Take to the streets, we who've never once tasted the stench of defeat. Victory sweet as the dregs of the fast food dumpster. Look how they jump when we show up, like they've just seen a monster. New dreams.
This ain't Monkey Wrench by Foo Fighters. This isn't actually an ad for my new show. You want to join me, Zach, every Saturday at 8 p.m. for your favorite 90s hits, throwbacks, and deep cuts. We'll be playing you songs like this all night from 8 to 9 p.m. So join me as I take you to the 90s.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Melodies of Myth, where we explore short historical tales blended with Indian classical and Western music. I'm your host, Simar Kaur, and it's an honor to accompany you on this journey of discovering the rich interweaving of music and history. Together, we will explore the stories, traditions, and timeless melodies that have shaped our understanding of this art form. Today I want to start off with an instrumental version of the song Lag Ja Gale, which roughly translates to Embrace Me, My Love. The original song was sung by Lata Mangeshkar and was featured in a 1980s film. But this version by Anurag Mohan really captures the emotional depth and beauty of the original, letting the music speak for itself, showcasing the musical brain that goes into composing a song long before lyrics are even added. And with that being said, enjoy the soothing melodies as we set the mood for what's to come.
Thank you.
For our next piece, we have a beautiful instrumental rendition of a classic Bollywood track, Ye Haseen Vadiyan, originally composed by the legendary music director A.R. Rahman, takes on a fresh and mesmerizing twist in this sitar cover by Bhagirath Bhatt, accompanied by Ankit Dhupar. With the delicate strings of the sitar weaving through the haunting melody, this instrumental version brings out the song's serene beauty in a whole new light. So, sit back, relax, and let the music transport you to these beautiful landscapes of sound. Enjoy.
Oh,
For our next piece here, I'll be sharing a fascinating TikTok clip by Canadian artist Shawn Mendes, who recently surprised his fans with a unique musical experiment. Known for his heartfelt lyrics and chart-topping hits, Shawn Mendes has stepped outside his usual repertoire to collaborate with the sound of a traditional Indian instrument, a harmonium. This blend of cultures has captivated audiences worldwide, showcasing his versatility as a musician. Let's dive in and experience this beautiful fusion that's making waves online.
The AMS Food Bank provides confidential and non-judgmental food options to members of the Queen's community in the most comfortable environment possible. The Food Bank helps to ensure that Queen's students can be healthy and productive as they pursue academic achievement and alleviates poverty amongst Queen's community members. We are open Monday to Friday from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. in room 105 of the Rideau Building. For entry into the Food Bank, we ask to see the sticker on the back of your student card to ensure you are a valid student. We have an amazing team of volunteers to welcome you and answer any questions you may have. to donate, you can e-transfer a controller at ams.queensu.ca with the subject line AMS Food Bank Donation, or bring non-perishables to our location during the service hours. Also, check out the Pay What You Can Peach Market, providing equal access changing hunger, in the new medical building for fresh soup and entrees on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. For any questions, please reach out to foodbank@ams.queensu.ca.
And now, for our short story of the day, we're going to be talking about how Canadian jazz met Indian rag, the unique collaboration of Treachy Sankaran. Treachy Sankaran is a name that has become synonymous with the fusion of Indian classical music and Western jazz, creating an innovative bridge between two very different musical worlds. Born in India, Sankaran is a renowned tabla maestro whose career spans decades and continents. Now based in Toronto, he has played a pivotal role in introducing the complexities of Indian rag and rhythm to Canadian jazz, inspiring both musicians and audiences alike. Sankaran's musical journey began in his native Tamil Nadu, where he was immersed in the traditions of South Indian classical music from an early age. Trained in the art of Carnatic music, his deep understanding of rhythm and melody became the foundation of his extraordinary tabla playing. After moving to Canada in the late 1970s, Sankaran found himself drawn to the vibrant jazz scene that was beginning to take shape in Toronto, where musicians were exploring new ways to push musical boundaries. It was here that he began experimenting with the fusion of Indian classical music and jazz. The blending of the complex rhythmic cycles of Indian music with the improvisational nature of jazz created a unique sound that was at once captivating and innovative. Sankaran's tabla playing, with its intricate patterns and melodic sensibility, added a new dimension to jazz performances, creating a dialogue between the two traditions that had never been heard before. One of his landmark collaborations was with jazz pianist and composer Paul Bley, a partnership that exemplified the fusion of Indian classical elements with the improvisational spirit of jazz. In the 1980s, Sankaran and Bley performed together in various jazz festivals, drawing attention to the power of cross-cultural musical exchange. Their collaboration was not just about blending sounds, but about finding common ground in the concept of improvisation. Whether in a rag or a jazz solo, both forms of music rely heavily on spontaneous expression. Sankaran's influence extended to other notable musicians, including saxophonist and composer John Coltrane's influence on Indian music and fellow Canadian musicians like Don Thompson and Terry Clark. His work paved the way for future collaborations between jazz musicians and Indian classical artists in Canada, such as the renowned work of the group of Raga Jazz in the 1990s. Sankaran's contributions have been pivotal, not just to the world of music, but to the cultural exchange between India and Canada. His ability to unite two distinct traditions has created a new musical language that resonates globally, showcasing the beauty of collaboration and the power of music to transcend boundaries. In addition to his performance career, Sankaran is also a passionate educator, teaching both Indian classical music and jazz to students in Canada and abroad. His dedication to passing on the traditions of his native music while fostering new creative collaborations has made him a revered figure in the Canadian music scene. As Trichy Sankaran once said, "Music is a universal language. The tabla speaks to the heart and jazz speaks to the soul. Together, they tell a story that can only be told through the union of both traditions." His work is a testament to the endless possibilities that arise when cultures and musical forms collide, creating something entirely new and deeply enriching for all.
I faced it. I have Alzheimer's disease.
My diagnosis has let me get on with my life my way.
The more we learned about my grandfather's dementia, the more we could face the future and make plans.
My husband Tom and I spoke to our doctor right away.
I have Alzheimer's, but it doesn't have me.
I faced it.
So can you.
For more information about early diagnosis, visit alzheimer.ca.
Up next, we have a dynamic and captivating track, Kautilya from Spotify Echo, featuring the incredible talents of Anuradha Pal, Naveen Kumar, and Rishabh Rikiram Sharma. This fusion of traditional Indian rhythms and contemporary sounds brings to life the spirit of Kautilya, blending intricate tabla beats with powerful melodic elements. It's a celebration of Indian classical music with a modern twist, a perfect example of how genres can transcend boundaries. Let the rhythm take over and immerse yourself in this unforgettable performance. Enjoy Kautilya.
Thank you. घनन घनन छायोरी धमक धमक चमक बिजुरी कहत हरि तुराज आयोरी
Our journey together today comes to an end. I hope you enjoyed, and I also hope to see you back here at Melodies of Myth next Friday at 1:30 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Hey, students. Have you stumbled in your course and want a fresh start? Well, At the Best University has your back. AU offers more than 850 courses that align to your program, so you can retake your course online, turn that grade around, improve your GPA, explore new subjects, and study from anywhere. Visit athabascu.ca to browse our online courses and transform your education today.
Supercharged, you can't handle me.
Handle?
Hold up, ain't you Nathaniel B?
What is it?
Get the-
Tune in at Wednesdays at 2 p.m. from the program. I, your host Nate, will go over a variety of different genres and themes. I sometimes call my friends and do dumb stuff, and if you guys like dumb stuff, you're gonna love my show. So yeah, Wednesdays, 2, be there.
When I say beat, you say banter. Beat, banter. Beat,
banter. When I say beat, you say banter. Beat, banter. Beat,
banter. Join us every Thursdays at 1 on CFRC for your special time with your favorite.